keeps it alive. Bird connects. It's Sue Bird's building.
There are a few athletes alive more decorated than Sue Bird. The Seattle Storm guard has won 3 WNBA championships, 4 Olympic gold medals, 2 NCAA titles, and 4 FIBA World Cups. And she's not done yet. This July, Bird will fly to Bradenton, Florida, when the WNBA begins its 22-game regular season, more than 2 months after its original start date in May. Today, Bird discusses the WNBA's plan for a clean site, why some stars have opted out to focus on social justice causes, and what she expects from a season unlike any other. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, June 29th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how's it going?
It's good. So, Sue, the players have voted. The WNBA is officially kicking off the 2020 season in late July at IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. How are you feeling about all of this, about basketball being played in 2020?
You know, I'm not going to lie. It's kind of mixed emotions. You know, I think when it comes to just simply playing basketball, that's an easy answer. There's something about it that, you know, will give all of us, I don't know, a sense of purpose. We love to play. We'll be able to do great things for the WNBA in this bubble. But then obviously with what's going on, whether it's, you know, health and safety pandemic wise, whether it's social justice wise, just a lot to kind of process through. I do plan on going, so that's not really what I'm trying to announce or anything like that. But it's still like as the date approaches, you know, it's still a lot going on, I think, in everybody's head.
You're a VP of your union. What were some of the union's biggest concerns as you guys came to an agreement on this?
I mean, first and foremost, it's definitely the health part of it all, you know, the safety part of it all, and just kind of going through, you know, what the protocol is going to be. And, you know, the frustrating part, and it's nobody's fault, is that because COVID-19 is obviously new and there's not tons of information on it, because we're trying to get this season going in a, you know, at the time it felt like in a, you know, 3-4 week period, we're trying to make all these decisions. A lot of doctors just didn't have concrete answers. So the frustrating part was wanting to hear just like exact answers and really not getting them, just being able to be told what, you know, kind of they hope things to be and what they plan for. So again, it just brings a little bit of anxiety, but I think now that we are getting closer, that is one thing that got handled. After that, I mean, it was the money. I'm not going to lie. You know, when you pull up to a table for negotiations, you never know what's going to happen. But luckily, at the end of the day, it took us a second to get there. But at the end of the day, we got 100% of our money, even though we're playing, you know, a little less in terms of games. But all in all, that was a good thing as well. And then the third thing was the social justice aspect. You know, WNBA is 80% Black women. You know, we're kind of at the intersection of so many things, and we need our league to stand for something and to support us. So those were kind of like the non-negotiables.
As you mentioned, it's so hard to make these decisions when you're working with such imperfect information, especially scientifically, right? What was that like for you personally making that call?
I don't know if this is going to be a great analogy, but because I've had so many surgeries and I've had to do, you know, a lot with just like doctors and getting opinions, I've come to understand that, you know, we view doctors in this light of knowing everything. And I've actually in my own way I've come to understand that they know a lot. And hopefully, you know, you have doctors, luckily I do, around you that you can trust. But there's a limit to that. You know, when they cut you open to perform a surgery, there's always a percentage, you know, always a chance that it's not going to work out exactly how you want. So for me, I just tried to actually put myself back in that mindset, like, okay, they're giving us as much as they can, but there's obviously uncontrollables as well. I mean, honestly, the state of Florida being one, but that's a whole other bag of worms.
So coronavirus cases are high and they've been rising in Florida, where you guys will be. The NBA is at Disney World. You're at IMG Academy. What do you anticipate that setup's going to be like?
Yeah, I mean, every time I turn on the news and I see the news out of Florida, I'm just like, are you freaking serious right now? Like, come on.
Tonight, another record-breaking milestone for Florida. Nearly 10,000 cases in a single day on the heels of 9,000 the day before.
I just don't understand it, but here's how I feel. I feel like if we as players who go, if we can get into this bubble, safely and negatively, so to speak. I think the bubble is set up, and people don't really like to call it a bubble. Let's call it a clean site. The clean site is set up for success. Now, that doesn't mean something can't happen. But even if something does happen, there are protocols in place that are there to protect us. But you could argue, you really could make the argument that being in Florida doesn't matter as much because we're in the clean site. And you could maybe even make the argument that as a player, you're safer in a clean site than you are, you know, in your own home. Because probably when you're home, you know, you got to go to the grocery store, or, you know, you got to go do this, or you want to do that, or things start opening. And so you're tempted. In the clean site, there won't be that temptation at all. At the end of the day, you have to trust people. That's where this protocol really is all based on, trusting people. So that's a whole other thing as well.
Are you worried about getting bored at the clean site?
You know, it's funny. A lot of us have been saying this, like, kind of to each other. We all have played overseas. You can't bore us. Like, we have survived. I lived in Russia for 10 years. I am, like, bored immune. We know how to make it work. Seriously, like, if there's one group of players that can get through this, it's WNBA players. Like, we know how to make it work.
What does that entail? Like, Animal Crossing? Tell me.
No, you just, you know, maybe it's, I mean, I was very lucky. I got to play overseas for most of my career over there with my best friend, Diana Taurasi. So listen, we could go to a coffee shop and literally sit there for like 6 hours and be like, all right, should we go get dinner now? So you just find ways to like kill time. Maybe you binge on movies, maybe you read books. You just find ways.
You pointed out that players aren't just questioning the decision for health reasons, but also because of what's happening in this country with advocacy and social justice and the protests that have been happening. And a number of WNBA players, Tasha Cloud, Renee Montgomery, Tiffany Hayes, have spoken out about opting out. Of course, Maya Moore's been not playing for a while. How do you think the league, which has been such a leader on social justice for so long, can continue to be at the forefront as the season progresses?
Yeah, I mean, I have so much respect because, you know, that's not an easy decision. You know, I'm sure I can't speak for those players, but, you know, outside looking in, even if it feels like you feel like your heart is telling you to do something, it doesn't mean it's easy to actually pull the trigger on it. So I just have a ton of respect for all the players that you named, and probably more, to be honest. You know, for them, I think, you know, what their hearts were telling them was that they needed to be in their communities to have the impact, to feel that impact. And I think there's, you know, no wrong answer. Whatever a player decides to do, it's their choice. And I 100% support that. I think as a league, you know, to your point, when we are together, I think, and we do have the WNBA support, we do have a platform that can have a major impact. So we're just right now like brainstorming, kind of figuring things out, what we want to do, what are, you know, as simple as what do we want our shooting shirts to say, and as big as, you know, what organizations do we want to support. But as a unit, so to speak, you know, we do feel like we can have a big impact. And the best thing is, I think even for a player like Natasha and Renee and Tiffany, who won't be in the exact, you know, clean site with us, they're always going to be with us. It's always going to be this league doing it together, whether you're playing in the clean site or not.
This subject, whether to play, you know, whether to participate in protests, it's been a topic in all sports. And of course, with the NBA, there's been some debate over whether players want to play for that reason, although we have not seen any male athletes step aside in the same way this summer. Why do you think the WNBA has been a leader on this for so long?
I mean, I just think that there's a direct correlation between female athletes and knowing how to fight for yourself and knowing how to speak up for yourself and speak up for your teammates as well. And in this case, for the entire league. It's kind of embedded in us, almost sadly, like almost unfortunately. But we're just constantly in these positions where we have to, like, you know, fight to get the respect or fight to get the time, you know, from like a media perspective, or fight to get the corporate sponsorship money. It is literally at this point ingrained in us. So whenever we have to kind of, like, you know, tighten the belt up and pull up to the fight, we're down for it. it's in us. And so it's just a natural fit.
All right. After the break, let's talk about the financial ramifications you alluded to and how the WNBA has evolved recently. We're presented by Marathon. Now more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high quality, top tier gas. While we're aware travel may not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop into the car to run an errand. Or maybe you just want to drive to see your best friend, simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. And right now, you can get 5 cents off every gallon every day with Make It Count rewards from Marathon. Plus, you can earn points for additional savings on fuel, airfare, hotels, and more. This is definitely a deal you can count on. It's also quick and easy to join. Just download the free Make It Count app or go to makeitcount.com/radio and start saving today. This offer is valid only at participating Marathon stations. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. So, from the perspective of growing the league and the growth it's had recently, why do you think it was important for this season to happen?
I don't think the WNBA is much different from any other business. The longer you don't get to do whatever it is your business is doing, I think the harder it is financially. It's like simple economics. You know, we have an ESPN deal and, you know, we have to play on TV a certain amount of games to get that money. And so there's driving factors behind that. And I think we're all, the WNBA included, dealing with that balance of being smart and respecting the pandemic and respecting coronavirus, but also trying to like get through it without being completely financially destroyed. And it's a tough balance.
But also, you know, doesn't just make sure you guys get paid, but also sustains momentum, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't even coming from the standpoint of players getting paid. I was talking more about like league health. But that's another part, you know, like I think sometimes people lose sight of the fact that yes, it's a sport, but these are people's incomes, you know, and there's some people that, not some, probably most, that need the money, play basketball to get paid. And as a women's basketball player, you know, usually we kind of have a year long life that includes playing overseas. Who knows if that's going to happen? So if the WNBA provides a way to play, I think for a lot of players, it's, you know, financially for them individually, it's important to look at it.
Back in January, you guys agreed, back in January, Sue.
I know.
Yes, 10 years ago. No, not that long ago, you guys agreed to this massive new CBA with pretty significant salary increases, better benefits, accommodation, amongst other things.
A new 8-year CBA called Groundbreaking, agreed upon by the WNBA and its players. Salaries go up. Some basics that you'd have thought they already had but didn't, like their own hotel rooms when they're on the road and paid maternity leave. Also, better travel, which had been pretty lousy, among the improvements.
Why was this such a big deal for not just the WNBA, but women's sports, period?
Well, first of all, you know, you have two sides in every CBA negotiation, right? You got the players and then you have the owners. And I think from a player standpoint, it was showing women who kind of saw what their value was and never backed down from that. You know, we had not like, we didn't take hard stances. I think we all worked very well together with the owners, but we understood that there were certain things that needed to change. And we did not back down from that. And, you know, I have to give the owners credit as well, because what they're showing the world, and I think this is where our CBA can really help other women's sports, is they see that value as well. And they said, okay, like we're going to continue to invest. Not only that, we're going to invest even more. And that's where women's sports is right now. Like we're all kind of, you know, hungry and thirsty for those investments, because for some reason, you know, whenever you talk about men's sports, all you hear about is the money they make. When you talk about women's sports, people only focus on what we're not doing. And the truth is, men's sports needed that investment early on as well to get going. And we need that investment, whether it's, again, corporate sponsorship, you know, media, you name it. So I think our owners show that they're going to invest in us. And you talked about some of the things we got that have nothing to do with financials, which is like 100% maternity leave. These are things that not just in sports, but in life need to be the norm. And sometimes it just takes like that first step for someone to you know, commit to that and show the world how women should be treated in the workplace. And then others can adopt it. So hopefully that happens. And then I think eventually the goal is that the WNBA is like booming. I always joke, like, I hope I'm like that, like disgruntled older player. I'm like 20 years out of the league talking about, I didn't get to make a million. Like, I hope I'm that player. Cause that means we did it right.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, you recently resigned with Seattle to play your 19th season.
Hey, Storm fans, Sue here. I've got some really surprising news from you. It's kind of shocking. So if you're not already seated, please do that now. Okay, here we go. I re-signed with the team, so I'll be back this summer. Can't wait to see you.
How were things different for a player from when you came into the league coming out of UConn?
You know, I think now, you know, culturally things have changed so much and you can really be yourself. I don't think you're put in a box as much as when I first came out of college. Obviously I'm gay, so, and I knew that back then, but very early I felt, I don't even know if somebody actually verbally told me this, but very early I felt like, well, I probably shouldn't, you know, tell people this and I should probably like try to look feminine. And, you know, sometimes I think about like quotes I've had in the past and I definitely said early in my career, like, yeah, well, it's proven that sex sells. So if people want to come to games because women are pretty, but then they see the basketball is great, they'll probably stay. And I want to like vomit. But that was kind of like the vibe. It was like, you know, be feminine. And that's kind of what our commercials were predicated around. So I think now for players, they can really come in and kind of just like, you know, I hate using the word brand, but they can kind of like be their own brand, whatever that is, and be true to that. And so that part has definitely changed.
I'm sorry I interrupted you there to say, oh no, as you were giving that.
No. Honestly, totally appropriate.
I feel like I did the same thing earlier in my career too. And I also would not want to, and it, yeah, my impersonation like of myself was sound exactly the same.
I'm not like other girls. I love football.
Yeah.
Well, you talked about leverage though, as it pertains to the CBA. Obviously you've had tremendous success throughout your career, but when did you first start thinking you had leverage to ask for these things?
Not until recently. And it wasn't necessarily about leverage. It just was like almost enough is enough. That was more the vibe. It was like, enough is enough. We need to not have roommates. You know, enough is enough. You need to get us out of economy and put us in economy plus. Like, you need to treat us the way you want us to play. Because the truth is, as players, the product on the court has just gotten better and better. We always show up. There's always epic games. There's always epic finals. There's always good basketball happening. So we've lived up to our end of the bargain. And now it's time to treat us, you know, equally to that.
Well, speaking of that improved on-court product, let's talk about the season. From a basketball perspective, what do you think is going to be the most challenging aspect of playing a season in this fashion?
Oh, it's definitely going to be the lack of preparation time. Sadly, WNBA players probably didn't have, you know, full court basketball hoops in their backyard. So when the pandemic hit, you know, for me personally, I was actually in Connecticut for pretty much my entire quarantine. And, you know, within like 2 weeks, you know, I was trying to go outside to go to local parks to get some shots up. Nope. They took the rims off. They would tie the nets up. So very quickly it was like, okay, I'm probably not going to be able to play basketball for a long time. And so that was the situation for a lot of people, you know, so it's just now being added to our regimen. We're allowed in our facilities. And so it's just going to be different. And then of course, when players opt out, which again, totally within their right, I have zero problem with it. You know, teams and rosters are probably going to look different. This might be the season of the young player, to be honest. They might just get their chance to do, to have more playing time and to get some looks.
I think that setup thing you're describing, by the way, didn't strike a lot of people until we did the horse competition and they saw Tanika versus Mike Conley. I mean, to be fair, Mike Conley's gym, I could fit my entire house in there, but the contrast was pretty jarring.
I know. I was actually going to say the horse game and then I was like, maybe I shouldn't put light on that.
No, I mean, people were like, it was just so obvious there. But again, that gym was absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Do you think people will look at this season with an asterisk?
Probably. You know, I think there's definitely going to be people who say that, but there's always that argument, right? Like for the WNBA last year, there was like Maya Moore sat out, Diana Taurasi wasn't playing, Stewie got hurt, Candace Parker was hurt for a small portion of the season. So people would say that about 2019 too. There's always going to be someone who has a storyline, but at the end of the day, you played a season. And to me, the only asterisk is actually going to be like, this was at a clean site during a pandemic. Like that's going to go in like the history books, as something wild, you know, something you tell your kids about. So, as far as like the basketball part of it, I don't even think about it.
I have heard speculation that you've held out on retiring because you wanted to compete in your fifth Olympic Games. But of course, the Olympics have now been postponed to 2021. Are you still aiming to compete?
You know, that is true. It's not that I was holding out. I just kind of, you know, I've always said this, right? Like if I'm healthy and I'm playing at a high level, then yeah, I'm going to want to compete in whatever it is. And as this year approached, you know, pre-pandemic, it was like, well, yeah, the Olympics are coming. I feel good. Let's do this. Now I've just kind of, I don't know. I don't think about it. There's a chance the Olympics gets canceled. There's a chance it doesn't. And I'm just kind of like, whatever. I don't have a lot of basketball left. So right now I'm focused on this clean site. And I'm really not trying to be like politically correct with this. Like, I just don't know what's going to happen. I'm 39. I'll be 40 in October. I'm like, I just don't know what my body's going to do. If I can compete in the Olympics, of course, I'm never going to say no to that. I mean, so much is going to happen between now and then.
I think that's fair. I don't even know what I'm going to be doing in 3 weeks, too. So I think if there was ever a time to beg out of answering questions about the future, it's right now. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Coming up, Cam Newton finds a new home. Who could have seen this coming? Here's another story I want you to know. Last night, our Adam Schefter dropped a bomb on the NFL with the news that former Panthers quarterback and former MVP Cam Newton is going to be a New England Patriot this year. According to Schefter, Cam signed a one-year incentive-laden deal and will step into the mix to replace Tom Brady in New England. There is so much to unpack here, such as the question of whether Cam is healthy or whether the Patriots are now favorites to win the AFC East, and we will get to that. But for now, let's just focus on the important thing, which is that on March 24th, yours truly went on ESPN and had this to say about Cam Newton parting ways with Carolina.
But everyone knows the Panthers are going to release Cam, so they're going to wait and the Patriots are going to get him for nothing and then they're going to be good and it's going to be awful.
And so here we are now in June. Tom Brady is a Buck. Cam Newton is a Patriot. And 2020 continues to be absolutely wild. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.